Jeffrey Donovan. I spoke with Jeffrey back in 2018. He's a research forester with the US Forest Service in Portland, Oregon. And he was taking an interest in the health benefits of urban trees. It's quite timely that we've got Jeffrey on, because you might have heard that detail before the news, which was talking about the government's plans, the cross-party agreement between Labor and National to change the legislation covering what you can do on your property, maybe freeing things up. You can build maybe up to three stories without needing a consent. And if you can do that, it's quite likely you might want to knock down what's there right now, and that might include knocking down any trees on the property. And I've already received several texts from people worried about that. Well, Jeffrey spoke to me in October 2018 about the benefits of urban trees. He was doing research, but he had more work to do. He's now published a paper which he claims, or at least he concludes in this paper, there might be a link between biodiversity in urban areas and childhood leukemia. And he is on the line now from the United States of America. Kia ora, Jeffrey. Welcome back to Nights.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to have you back, Jeffrey. A bit has happened since we last spoke in all sorts of ways.
Yes.
And I guess when we spoke last time, it was, I think you were working on the hypothesis, but now you've published a paper. You looked at the incidence of leukemia in New Zealand, am I right?
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
Why did you choose New Zealand, Jeffrey?
It's really because of the database that Stats New Zealand operates. It has this thing called the Integrated Data Infrastructure, which is a series of linked databases that cover most of New Zealand. And they include things like health, but also things like education, the census, a whole range of databases. And it allows you to do this sort of work where you comb through thousands, or in this case, hundreds of thousands of records to try and find patterns. So in this case, I was able to look at health records of kids from 1998 to 2013 that were born in that period, so 950,000 kids, and see whether ones who were born in areas with greater plant diversity had a greater or a lower risk of developing childhood leukemia. And really, the sort of data you have in New Zealand aren't available in other parts of the world, certainly not in the States where I am.
Okay. Well, let's look at what you found when you looked at that data set of 950,000 kids, which is a reasonably big sample. And so before I ask you more, though, what were your definitions? How did you define or work out plant cover in an area?
Right, that's a good question. We used plant cover using satellite imagery, but to look at actual diversity of the plant cover, we use something called the Global Biodiversity Information Facility, which is the largest repository of biodiversity data in the world. There's about 2 billion records throughout the world and about 2 million records of plants within New Zealand. So we use that to determine whether an area had greater or lower plant diversity.
Did you look at urban areas only?
No, we looked at the whole country, although just because, you know, New Zealand is a largely urban country, that's where most live. But also there's perhaps the paradox that the most biodiverse areas were often in cities. We wouldn't necessarily think that, but it's because we can plant and maintain such a wide variety of plants in our gardens.
It's true. And also because, say, if you are in a rural area, maybe you're in an area where it's quite a monocultural operation. Your farm might be mostly pasture, certain kinds of pasture or certain kinds of crops. So I guess it's possible that you might be away from a city and still have less biodiversity than your common run-of-the-mill suburban bungalow backyard.
It is. I mean, if you're in rural areas, the amount of greenness or plants and trees you're going to be exposed to is greater, certainly. But the diversity of that exposure might be lower. It's a kind of a paradox, which we found.
Why were you looking at biodiversity, not just trees on their own? I mean, why not just say, okay, we were looking at a link between trees and health. So, but you went for biodiversity. Now, that's different.
Yeah, And it's a crucial difference because ultimately it wasn't the plants that we were interested in. We thought it was the bacteria that were living on the plants that were actually stimulating kids' immune systems and protecting them from the childhood leukemia. And what we know from past research is in areas that have more diverse plants, they have more diverse bacteria growing on those plants. So it's really in this case, for this particular disease, there was the diversity that mattered. If you're interested, say, in a disease that was, let's say, preventable by improving air quality, then you might be interested in just the volume of plants, the volume of trees, because the trees might absorb air pollution. But in this case, it was the diversity of the microbes growing on those plants that we thought was providing the protective effect. So diversity was crucial.
I'm speaking to Jeffrey Donovan. He's a research forester with the US Forest Service, but he's done research in New Zealand into the relationship between biodiversity and childhood leukemia. Now, you had a set of 950,000 kids, 1998 to 2013. What did you find in terms of the incidence of leukemia, those links with biodiversity?
So what we did is we split biodiversity into thirds. So whether you lived in an area with the lowest third of biodiversity or the middle third or the top third. And we find that kids who lived in the top third, neighborhoods with the highest third of biodiversity, they were at 35% lower risk of developing childhood leukemia compared to the kids who lived in the areas with the lowest amount of biodiversity.
Of course, the obvious, and I'm pretty sure that we discussed this last time I had you on, Jeffrey, is that maybe the leafy suburbs are the wealthy suburbs.
Yeah, oh no, absolutely. So we took account of things like that. We took account of things like the racial composition of neighborhoods, income, the social deprivation. We took account of those things, and that some of those things do, in fact, play a role, but not as big as you might imagine, certainly not as big as they would play in other diseases.
Can I ask you, Jeffrey, how you take account for those things?
Well, there's a thing called the New Zealand Deprivation Index, which is based on census data, which previous researchers developed. So you're based on nine census variables, and it accounts for the social deprivation in a particular mesh block, in this case, in a census mesh block. And so they grade them from 1 to 10, from the least to the most socially deprived. And then you can also account for things like income through or race through the census, or other types of census data as well. But we relied heavily on the what's called NZDEP, this deprivation index.
The thing that I guess I'm also interested in is whether you've also can account for, well, I guess, is it just leukemia that you're looking at in terms of disease? And I guess the other thing I'm wondering about is why leukemia of all diseases that you choose?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It's the most common pediatric cancer in the world. So in developed countries, it affects about 1 in 2,000 kids. And it develops in an interesting way. Kids in utero, about 1% of kids get a genetic mutation that makes them susceptible to that, to developing childhood leukemia. But after they're born, what happens is these kids will get an infection. It doesn't have to be a particular infection. And their immune systems, if they haven't developed properly, will have a disordered response to that infection. And that will trigger the development of the disease. But what we were thinking is, hey, if these kids were exposed to plant diversity earlier in life and the microbes and bacteria that grow on those plants, that might help stimulate the development of their immune system so that when they were exposed to that infection that might otherwise trigger the disease, their immune system would respond appropriately and they would be fine. So that was the mechanism that we were working with. And it sounds outlandish, but we know that other sources of microbial exposure can prevent kids from getting leukemia. So we know that if you have more older siblings, it certainly gives you higher microbial exposure, you're less likely to get childhood leukemia. Similarly, if you go to daycare, you're less likely to get childhood leukemia. So there is some epidemiological evidence that microbial exposure may be protective. And then on the opposite side, kids who are born by cesarean section who are deprived of that microbial exposure at birth are more likely to get childhood leukemia.
Can I ask you, Jeffrey, what percentage of the 950,000, that was the sample size, how many of those actually got leukemia?
So that when you 264 by age 5.
Okay. So, and then when you looked at your link between incidence of leukemia and high diversity compared to the low diversity, how much of a difference is there?
35%. So if you were in the top one-third of the plant diversity, you were at a 35% lower risk compared to the kids who are in the lowest one-third of plant diversity.
How confident are you with that sample size of 264 who actually got leukemia? That you've got enough there to start to draw a safe conclusion?
I'm pretty confident. Now, the point is well taken. That's a relatively small number, but we did what's called power analyses before we started to do this, and to look to see whether a sample size, 950,000 with this number, would actually be enough to detect a difference. And it told us that it did. So, yeah, I'm confident with the sample size, although these sort of studies are observational. And to be clear, you are finding an association. We're not saying, absolutely not saying, that this is a causal relationship. Mm. That would go, future studies, we hope, we're able to show a causal relationship. So I want to be clear on that point.
Yeah. So what could be some of the other explanations apart from biodiversity? You talked about microbial diversity, and that could help stimulate the immune system and protect children from leukemia. What I talked about, leafy suburbs being wealthy suburbs, and that the wealth factor might protect some kids from childhood leukemia. What else could explain this?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. We tried to pull that apart. And, it's always good to look at your own research skeptically and to see whether you can these are obviously, fairly interesting results. And you want to kick them around a bit and see whether there are alternative explanations. But we really didn't find them. These were fairly robust. We put in a lot of different variables, a lot of things to do with, say, education, race, education, income. And we really found these results pretty robust to including those sort of variables in the analysis. This result really held up quite well. Could there be something unmeasured in here? Yes, absolutely there could. And this is obviously the first study that has found this sort of result, so it awaits confirmation by other people. But I think it's an interesting first step.
When did you publish the paper, Jeffrey?
Just this year.
Okay, and what was the response been from your peers?
I think a variety. I think interest, healthy skepticism, a variety of responses, I think. Certainly, probably similar to some of the responses you've your responses this evening.
Mm.
But, we're doing ongoing research, both in the States, and I'm partnering with Massey University there in Wellington to try and now get down to the nuts and bolts, where we actually go and we sample plants in people's yards and we swab them and do DNA sample and do a DNA analysis to see, do more diverse plants really have more diverse bacteria? And then we're also going sampling in the atmosphere to see whether those bacteria are going to the atmosphere. So we've got this kind of interesting large association, but we're not leaving it at that. Now we're trying to get down into the nitty-gritty of it and see whether we can really grind out the mechanism that would link more diverse plants to ultimately healthier children.
In the meantime, back here in NZ, we've got the Labor government and the National Party in a cross-party agreement, which will they want to change the rules governing what you can do on your own property without seeking consent, needing consent from a council. The focus has been on the fact that you'd be able to build a property up to three stories high, before you need to trigger a consent process. But obviously, one of the things, and you would have seen it in New Zealand when you've come here, is with infill housing, they're already, and I can think of my own home suburb, Papatoetoe, where there's now lots of apartments getting built, and they're off Wiley Road. I shouldn't give the address away. I don't want my brothers getting visits. But it's an oasis of biodiversity, I can tell you. And because there's infill everywhere else. And so the thing is, we are being encouraged. There's a push to increase the density in our suburbs, partly to save for climate reasons, so we don't have to travel so much, we don't have so much sprawl, and we don't have to burn so much fossil fuels. But it's coming at a cost, it seems, at the moment. And other texts have been writing in about this in terms of the trees getting felled to make way for the properties.
Yeah, I mean, there's absolutely trade-offs here. And one of the things that I've done research on is what we talk about in environmental economics is positive externalities. So you might have a tree on your property, but the benefits of that tree aren't confined to your property. They spill over to your neighbors. And in the same way, the trees on your neighbor's property are going to spill over onto yours. So the actions they take can affect, you know, the health of an entire neighborhood.
Guess that and this is perhaps not your area of expertise, but at the moment, it will be interesting to see whether when the government passes this legislation, because it will, because it has the numbers, whether there will be some clauses in there to protect diversity. Because there's maybe a danger of throwing out the diversity bath with the baby, or the diversity baby with the bathwater. Mixing my metaphors there.
No, I agree. I mean, look at the global loss of biodiversity. There's a huge amount of loss. And in fact, there's something called the biodiversity hypothesis. And what it thinks is that we've seen a huge global loss of biodiversity over the last few decades. And over that same period of time, we've seen increases in immune diseases, and that one may be causing the other. As we increasingly lose plant diversity and the microbial diversity that lives on those plants, our immune systems are suffering. And so we're seeing increases in immune diseases like childhood leukemia, like asthma. And so I think you should be, I don't wish to, you know, tread in the politics of the country, but say you should tread cautiously with any policy that would exacerbate the loss of biodiversity.
Jeffrey, for you and your research, what's next?
I think the stuff that we're getting into now is to try and, as I talked about a second ago, is to try and really work out those mechanistic links. So, you know, when we look at the plants growing in somebody's garden, exactly what bacteria grow and exactly which plant species, you know, which plants have the bacteria that we think are particularly associated with positive health outcomes. So really getting down to a slightly more micro scale.
Any timetable for the next steps in the research, Jeffrey? Are you trying to persuade somebody to fund? You're working for funding at the moment?
Always. But that's it now. It's always slower than you would like, but that's okay. And, you know, I'm hoping as hopefully our world, you know, the COVID calms down, to be able to come back and do some of that work in New Zealand with my colleagues at Massey.
Jeffrey, lovely to talk with you again. Thanks for your time.
Not at all. Pleasure.
Jeffrey Donovan, research forester with the U.S. Forest Service in Portland, Oregon. But he's just published a paper, or he published it earlier this year, on the links between biodiversity and incidence of childhood leukemia in this country. He's very interested in the health benefits of urban trees and urban biodiversity.